Hello, this is your Polycast for Thursday, October 1st, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a judge says he will soon release his plan for the state sex offender program, and the numbers on black income may not tell the whole story. St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman and Police Chief Tom Smith are warning Black Lives Matter that any attempt by the group to disrupt Sunday's Twin Cities Marathon would be dangerous and won't be tolerated. Coleman plans to meet this morning with organizers of the protest. He said yesterday that all options are on the table to maintain order on Sunday. Governor Dayton says State Transportation Commissioner Charlie Zelli has done nothing wrong, even though a bus company owned by Zelli's family collected millions of dollars of taxpayer money. Tom Scheck reports.
Dayton says Zelli has been vetted. The legislature is aware that he still has ties to his family's bus company and that he recuses himself from any state decisions related to the company. The governor's comments come after the company received $2.3 million in state and federal grants in 2013 to subsidize rural bus service. Dayton called Zelli a terrific commissioner who decided to leave the private sector for a public job.
He didn't have to do this, and I don't think that makes him immune from any of these questions. But to say that the MnDOT's going to be corrupted by his presence there, I just disagree.
Zelli signed a conflict of interest statement in 2013 disclosing that he chairs the board of the company. He directed the company and MnDOT officials to keep him away from any decisions involving state money and the bus company. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minnesota regulators announced next year's premium rates for individual health plans today. Big price hikes are likely, Mark Zdechlik reports.
In June, federal government filings revealed that the big health insurers in Minnesota were proposing to raise rates on some plans between 23 and 54%. Asked about the rate increase, DFL Governor Mark Dayton says his understanding was that the Commerce Department was able to negotiate some requests down. He also said the insurance companies should be explaining why they're raising rates.
Certainly, anytime the rates are increased, they come at a cost to Minnesotans, and I dislike that. It undermines the whole attempt to make this affordable care system work.
Minnesota's Health Insurance Trade Association says insurers lost more than $300 million in the individual health plan market last year. Mark Zdechlik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The federal judge who ruled the Minnesota sex offender program is unconstitutional says he will make a decision on how to fix it in the next 30 days. But that doesn't mean the state will give up its fight to continue detaining several hundred sex offenders for treatment beyond their prison sentences. Peter Cox has more.
U.S. District Judge Donovan Frank asked the state and people held in the Minnesota Sex Offender Program to submit ways to fix the program. He already said it violated the rights of the 720 people in the state treatment facilities. The attorney for the offenders suggested a long list of remedies that includes immediate assessments of all offenders in the program and new, less restrictive facilities. Minnesota officials declined to suggest any changes and instead argued that the 20-year-old program is constitutional. The state also said what the sex offenders recommended couldn't be done on a quick timeline and would require staffing levels they can't match. Outside the courthouse, Department of Human Services Commissioner Lucinda Jessen says she would like to see changes.
I want to see further reforms. That's why I've been pushing for these further reforms in the legislature. But these reforms should not be coming from a court is directing them because the program's being run unconstitutionally. I believe we are running in the constitutional way.
Dan Gustafson is the attorney for the people in the sex offender program. He says the judge may take significant action.
He probably won't order all of the things that I requested. I had a long list of things, and obviously I advocated vigorously for my clients in that regard. But I think he's going to enter orders that are going to make some significant changes in this program.
Jessen says the state will fight any big changes the judge orders.
If he rules against us, we will appeal that ruling to the Eighth Circuit.
An appeal could mean that reforms to the program are a long way off. Gustafson says the appeal could include a stay or temporary stoppage on Frank's remedies while the case moves through the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals.
If it turns out that the appeal is filed and a stay is issued, it could be 18 to 24 months before we see any significant changes.
Frank said today he wouldn't go as far as ordering the mass release of people from the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, but he's warned in the past that he'll make a forceful solution if state leaders aren't willing to fix the program. Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News.
When the latest one-year census data came out earlier this month, new numbers showed Black Minnesotans were significantly worse off economically in 2014 than they were the year before. Diwali Zaikautau has been talking to analysts and reports on why the numbers don't tell the whole story.
On Sunday afternoons, Shannon Page is usually out sweeping cigarette butts and removing street trash from the ground outside Potsaluna in downtown St. Paul.
And it's a Thai restaurant. I wash dishes for $11.25 an hour, union.
He's 34, goes by the name Smokey, and has 10 tattoos.
A couple of them are like my grandmother's name and then just a couple odds and ends, my nickname. I'm a Scorpio, so I got scorpion on my neck and got some other ones.
Smokey graduated from Apple Valley High School. Nearly half of Minnesota's Black population has either a high school diploma or less education. In the last decade, he sold shoes, worked in auto rescue, but mostly he's worked in the food service industry.
Like a Black male, it is hard. A lot of people don't want to, they judge you before they get to know you. And it's not how life should be. You should always give somebody a chance, even a person that has a criminal record.
He doesn't have a criminal record and considers himself lucky. One in four African Americans of working age in Minnesota is an ex-felon, according to Minnesota State demographer Susan Brower.
A large proportion of the Black population have criminal records, and so that can be a big barrier to employment.
Historically, Black Minnesotans have less education than other populations, and when you factor in that the Black poverty rate has remained high and almost unchanged at about 37% for decades, it means Blacks are less likely to have college degrees. Again, Susan Brower.
To me, it shows not that this group is faring worse than they were in the year prior, in 2013, but that something's going on with this group, that there are changes to this group that we are seeing unfold with each data set release that we get.
She says there have also been population changes, births, deaths, shifts in households, and movement in and out of the state. For example, about 9,000 Blacks moved out of Minnesota, but in-migration resulted in 16,000 Blacks moving into the state between 2013 and 2014. Consider also that data show the population of foreign-born Blacks with limited English skills increased by an estimated 14,000 in that same period.
Who's here? Who's working? Who left? All of these things can impact that one high-level summary number. And we just need to be really careful about interpreting year-to-year changes.
For Carl Blakely, a transplant from Chicago, working as a service desk analyst for 8 years in the Twin Cities wasn't easy. He's finally full-time, working for a St. Paul company, where he's the only Black employee at headquarters.
I've never been uncomfortable with that. I know some people are uncomfortable with that, but I actually enjoy it because, I learn a lot about different people. And, I'm sort of a Renaissance guy in that regard. I would rather be around different folks.
His office has a skylight. His cubicle is comfortable, he says. But he admits both he and his wife took pay cuts and wish they could afford to do more to help their kids. A daughter is in high school, a son in college. For him, wage disparities have more to do with business trends.
I don't want to attribute it all to racism just because I'm comfortable in Minnesota. I know a lot of people who say, I don't like it up here, but I do because it's cosmopolitan. When it comes to this wage thing, I think that it's the businesses that have decided, well, this job is worth this much. Or
in the IT business, he's witnessed a number of company layoffs and then seen those same businesses turn around and hire college graduates for $9 an hour. Professor Samuel Myers is an economist at the University of Minnesota. He studies those trends, poverty numbers, and income. When he saw the census news that the median household income dropped by $4,000 for Black households, he was skeptical.
It comes from an extremely small sample. Nobody uses the American Community Survey 1% sample.
Myers says The African-American population in Minnesota is a diverse, heterogeneous group.
Very large concentration of individuals from Liberia, from East Africa, even a large representation of African-Americans who identify as African-Americans, but who might be, in fact, mixed race.
So Myers started calculating income changes based on a larger census data sample using different indicators.
I also looked at wage and salary income, because wage and salary is the largest component of household income. And when I computed the real, and that means adjusted for inflation, or the nominal, you know, values for Minnesota, for Mississippi, in every single instance, the value for Minnesota was higher than it was for Mississippi.
There's another positive indicator. Myers partnered with Concordia University to produce a new preliminary report based on three-year census data from the Survey of Business Owners. Economist Bruce Corey co-authored the report.
And these minority firms are growing faster in sales, in number of firms, in payroll, and in job creation than non-minority firms.
Minnesota's future labor force will depend much on people of color, African Americans, Latinos, Asian Americans, and Native Americans.
Their firms are major job creators and growing at a faster rate than non-minority firms. So the data coming out of entrepreneurship is that something good's happening in that entrepreneurial area that needs to be nurtured, because that's also going to be the solution to these declining economic assets.
There are about 48,000 minority firms in Minnesota, says Corey, with more than $8.7 billion in sales.
We are looking at the data from different lenses and pointing back to the policy question and urgency, what are we doing about it? Why is equity, why is this equity is not just equity and fairness, it's equity in terms of asset building.
Leaders of the NAACP chapters in Minnesota and the Dakotas met with Governor Mark Dayton recently to discuss equity in the workplace, in education, in housing, and other areas. Nikema Levy-Pounds, president of the Minneapolis chapter, says blacks are moving to Minnesota because the quality of life is good overall.
And they want to tap into those opportunities. They want to be able to get jobs. They want to be able to have their children attend a high-quality school. And so they're here seeking opportunity.
The problem, she says, is some Minnesotans aren't so nice.
The sad part is that we are not welcoming to outsiders, and we're especially not welcoming to African-American outsiders who come into our state. They face so much discrimination. We need to not just smile at people and look at their shoes, but we need to actually embrace them for who they are and help them to find their place in this state. There's room for everybody here.
She and other NAACP leaders plan to meet again with the governor in less than 2 months. Dwa Li Sai Kowtow, Minnesota Public Radio News, St. Paul.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.